All right, welcome back to another edition of the Forts Athletics Life and Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Inferna, and I'm so stoked to be talking to the 2022, I had to write this down so I don't mess it up, NSCA Assistant College Strength and Conditioning Coach of the Year, Ryan Metzger. How are you?
I am doing amazing. How are you? Thank you for having me, by the way.
I am so excited. Like I was telling you before we hit record, like, I find your story so interesting and fascinating.
Thank you.
Going through, you're very welcome. Like getting started as a gymnast and transitioning to strength coach extraordinaire and Olympic weightlifting, like phenom. Like it just, I don't know how, how you managed to do it, but like, why don't we get started? Like when did you first pick up a barbell? Like was it during gymnastics when you were a kid?
Yeah. So, actually the first time that I've ever been around a weight set for me when I was really, really young, I'm the youngest of five. I have two older brothers, two older sisters. We had an old time, like lifting set in our house. My brothers are 9 and 10 years older than me. I wanted to be just like them. They would lift because they're super athletic, played sports growing up, and they trained. And so I wanted to just like hang around and be with them. So they're, you know, 17, 18, whatever, you know, how, and I'm just this little kid being like, can I bench the barbell? Like, so I would lift with brothers as a kid. And I just was always exposed to that stuff up. I took a specialized gym class in my high school where my gym was resistance training and learning how to train myself. When I went to Wisconsin Oshkosh for my undergrad, I, you know, competed as a gymnast, and part of my thing was being in the weight room with our strength and conditioning coach. So it's really kind of been a staple throughout my entire life. Just depending on the level of which I was at, sure. Priority, it kind of became, and how much I dove down the rabbit hole of lifting barbells. So yeah, it's always been there.
So like, so when you got started as a kid in gymnastics and things, like, was that, a youth athlete, was that part of like your training regimen? Like I heard you mention something about, like 20 to 24 hours a week of training at one point. Like did any of that consist of like any type of strength and conditioning work in the gym? It was all just body weight?
So when I was actually going to a club, I was, I believe, 10 years old. That's when I was training those 24 hours a week, and I loved it. But it wasn't like we're lifting dumbbells, barbells, things like that. It was a lot of body weight stuff that was implemented through the gymnastics coaches there. And in addition to the gymnastics time, I don't think I've ever talked about this. I also was trained in ballet and jazz as like a requirement for gymnastics. So
that's cool.
The time I was spending in the gym and doing all of these body weight movements, but also flipping around, I also had to go be part of dance. Sure. So, I don't think I've ever mentioned that before. Not traditional lifting in the sense of like what you might see or what I'm coaching now at the college level, but it was a lot of, you know, body weight squat, you know, lunges, pull-ups, things like that, constant in the gym with coaches.
I mean, it sounds like with the dance and ballet and things, I mean, Herschel Walker participated in that when he was drafted into the NFL. So you're in good company.
Well, perfect. If you can compare me to him, how fitting. Right. But yeah.
So maybe that's the secret, I guess, like doing those types of activities when you're a kid. But So through high school then, like, does Oshkosh, I know they're D3, like I graduated from a D3 school also. So they're not in scholarship, I believe, right? So did you just wanted to go to Oshkosh from Illinois just because?
Yeah, so at the Division III level, there are no athletic scholarships that are awarded. Luckily, I come from a family that education was a big priority. My mom, super smart, probably one of the smartest people that I know. My dad always told me, like, do things and accomplish things that people can never take away from you. And one of those things is being educated. So I always did really well in school. So I was able to get a lot of academic scholarships in order to go to college. I knew that I wanted to continue my gymnastics career, but I didn't want it to consume my life in college. So I didn't think Division I was going to be the right setting for me. So I looked into Division III schools, and there are not very many states that have Division III gymnastics available. I think it's just Wisconsin, Minnesota, and like New York. I had a really limited pool of places to choose from. I wanted to go somewhere that had a really great kinesiology department. I wanted to go somewhere that was going to be like close enough to home that if I needed to go, I could go, but far enough away that like I couldn't get a surprise pop in from my parents. Sure. So Wisconsin Oshkosh was really just kind of a great fit because distance, it was great. And the kinesiology department was great. And they continued to expand while I was there. So it ended up actually being a really great choice. Mm-hmm. The campus was beautiful. And I met some great people while being there. So really happy with the one and only decision that I made in college.
Yeah, in New York, there aren't too many. I mean, there's our state system has 6 schools that have gymnastics, but not as much. I mean, you're competing against the same 6 colleges in Western New York every weekend. So, so when you're in Wisconsin Oshkosh and you join a gymnastics team, like what was your, from transitioning from your club team and all that training and preparation to the D3 level, did it meet your expectations? Was it more difficult? Was it easy? Like, can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I know that I've mentioned this before, but I don't think a lot of people know there was a very big gap in my gymnastics career because I was training so much at a really young age. I ended up being burned out very quickly. So I completely stopped training for a number of years. My high school had gymnastics, so I did gymnastics there. When I entered high school, my freshman and sophomore year, I just did it during the season that it was available. And I really didn't supplement anything or try to add to my skill set until I was about 16, when I decided I want to go back to a club because I think this is something that I want to pursue in college. So that was a much better schedule for me because I think I took so much time away, but also it was managed a lot better. I wasn't in the gym for 24 hours a week anymore.
Right.
I had high school to balance. I did track in high school, had another sport. It was just a lot more balanced and not so focused on gymnastics only. So when I went to college, we kind of got to zero in a little bit more on the gymnastics route. So it wasn't a hard transition for me at all, really, because I had already had so many things and I was taking care of the time management part of all of that. It was actually a really smooth transition and I enjoyed only having one sport again, but not at the level that, the time commitment that I was having before when I was younger.
Yeah, I mean, Oshkosh, as far as track, like I'm a track and field throwing coach. So and when we go to nationals, there's always 3, 4, 5, 6 throwers from Oshkosh every year, like no matter what. So I don't know what's going on out there, but
they have a great program and like great coaches. So
I mean, the whole Wisconsin system there. I mean, Eau Claire, lacrosse. I mean, there's always 2, 3, 4 throwers from every school, but so as you transition to college and you're in college, right? You're away from home and things like that. When you're competing, is it like I'm not really familiar with college gymnastics, like besides what I watch on like the SEC network and ACC and stuff like that. So competing at the D3 level, like what was there stress to perform at a certain level because of the success of the program, or was it just, it's nice to be part of the team. And if I do well, then, that's great also.
I think for me personally, there's always stress to perform well. I'm a very competitive person, whether it's gymnastics or weightlifting, or it's like playing a card game. Sure. I always want to win, like beat whoever I'm, you know, competing against. Mm-hmm. So I put it on myself a lot because I wanted to perform well. You know, was it going to make or break any situation if I didn't perform well? Probably not. I knew that the pressure as a whole, like, really wasn't on me. We weren't, you know, on TV and in a big spotlight. The way that like Division One is set up from a TV standpoint, it's one person competing on one event at a time. It's not like that in the three setting. So it's less eyes on you only, which I think helps take the pressure off. But from an individual standpoint, I definitely put it on myself. But from a team and overall gymnastics and how does this matter in the world? So.
Well, that's when I explain that to my college kids. Like there, I have a couple that are graduating this year. And they have jobs lined up in June. And it, like we have our conference championships this weekend. And it's like, you know, you're going to be a chemical engineer in 2 weeks. Like if you throw far, that's great. Like if you don't, you know, we still love you. And it's just, you know, you can add it to your resume and whatnot. That's why I just thought it's just so interesting, like talking to people who competed in different sports. But
I think to add to that, though, like if I can, just something that I did very different in college was I scheduled my classes whenever I needed to schedule class. And sometimes they conflicted with practice and I didn't because I was a Division III gymnast and there was no professional gymnastics waiting for me at the end of this year. Right. And so I remember my teammates used to get so angry at me because I would miss so much practice. And I was like, you realize that like you have to go work a career after this, right? I'm getting my degree. So kind of like you said, like it's cool to have on the resume, but at the end of the day, like I'm not a professional gymnast. So I need to be doing the things in college to set up for a career down the line.
Well, I mean, your career has exploded and it seems as though it kind of was sparked at Oshkosh. So you're kind of introduced to Olympic weightlifting and like that whole strength and conditioning component. How much of that you think kind of influenced your transition to Kentucky after, you know, after you graduated from Oshkosh?
Almost all of it. Because I, like I had mentioned earlier, I was introduced to our strength and conditioning coach, Steve Brown, my freshman year, and we did Olympic lifting my freshman and sophomore year. And so I remember lifting with him and doing these movements. We kind of transitioned how we trained. And so we didn't do them as much my junior and senior year, but I had already fallen in love with what I was being exposed to. And so I remember Wisconsin and Oshkosh like really kind of revamped their program for kinesiology. And one of the things that was an option was picking up a minor in strength and conditioning. And I was like, cool, let me do that. So I started picking up all of the strength and conditioning courses there because I've always wanted to be part of athletics, but I never knew that a strength and conditioning coach existed. Like I didn't know that was the career path I could take. So meeting Coach Brown was really influential. That program kind of really changing the minors was a big deal for me. And then going and sitting down with my advisor, Craig Bewer at the time, he was the one that suggested Kentucky to me for an internship. And the reason why he did was because a previous student of his went to Kentucky and she loved it. And so he was like, if this is the path that you want to take, like, I really recommend you look into this. And so I was really kind of just guided along the way. So I don't think if I didn't go to Wisconsin Oshkosh, I don't know that the path would have been the same. So super influential.
I mean, that's so great that there was somebody in your life, well, two people in your life that were able to kind of encourage you to go, you know, go down that path. So you do your internship in Kentucky. I mean, you reach out to them and things like that. It kind of reminds me of like, I student taught. So my background's in education. So our senior year of school, you take a couple methods classes and then you student teach for, you know, 8 weeks and then you have your winter break and then you do the same thing. So our senior year, we're kind of paying to student teach in strength and conditioning. I've had friends that you know, they go off and pay for a year or two or three to intern. And so like how, like yeah. my parents would have been like, nope, sorry. Like you're graduated, you have a teaching degree. Like that's what you're doing now. Like, so when you make that decision to go to Kentucky and you intern and you have like two or three other odd jobs, like were your parents, were they like, Ryan, like maybe reconsider, or were they really supportive of that decision?
I think that I'm really fortunate in that both of my parents have been very supportive for me and anything that I've done in different ways. I get different stuff from my mom than I do from my dad, but regardless of what it is, both of them supported me 100% in my decisions. And so when I decided to go to Kentucky, like, I don't think that they understood, but trusted my judgment and decision-making enough that they were like, if this is what you want to do, then this is what we'll do and we'll figure out a way to make this work. But they're also like, why can't you just do this up here in Chicago? Like, we don't know why you have to go somewhere else. Like they couldn't really wrap their minds around it. Maybe a little uncomfortable that their young daughter is going off to a completely different state doing anybody. But to me, I was like, well, this is the only path. So I have to do this.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. I went down there, didn't know anybody. It was unpaid. It ended up being unpaid for an entire year because I extended my time beyond the summer. So I interned there for that fall as well as that spring. And while I was there, I picked up odd jobs. Like you said, I coached gymnastics. I served at our restaurant. Again, I had really fortunate, parents that could help me. If I was like, I don't know how I'm going to make my rent this week, but like, I'm really trying. They're like, oh, you know, we'll figure it out. I think it was just helpful that they saw that I was trying to help myself. So they were willing to help me along the way. I was like, hey, this is just temporary. I promise. Right. Like, it won't be like this forever.
Right.
And so luckily things did work out where I ended up getting that grad assistant position. Was getting paid finally. So that was helpful.
Well, I encourage my kids too. Like, I've been at a couple other D3 schools, and for the ones that want to continue throwing post-collegiate, I'm like, well, let's call a college, see if they have a grad assistantship position. You can coach for a couple of years and they'll pay you to get your MBA or your master's in education or whatnot. But yours, I mean, it's just really interesting because I've never heard of a school like, hey, so we'll give you a grad assistantship, but you're going to learn how to Olympic weightlift and you're going to compete. Like how, like when that was pitched to you, like, was it, I don't know. It just like, I wouldn't ask a grad student, hey, you've never thrown before, but we'll pay you to do your grad work, but you're going to learn how to throw the shot put and discus. So like, how does that conversation happen?
Yeah, I was like, when that got presented to me, I was for it because I was so tunnel vision on becoming a strength and conditioning coach. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, if they want me to do that, I'll do it. If they ask me to do this, I'll do that. Like anything, they could have asked me anything probably. Yeah. And I would have been like, yeah, I'm in. Sure. And so the way that it happened was that Kentucky is a very Olympic-based program. So when I showed up at Kentucky in the summer, one of the first things that they do with their interns is they bring them in a little bit earlier than athletes come in because they're taking time to coach and teach Olympic lifting to their interns so that their interns, number one, know how to do it. And number two, can start to see some technical flaws, coach up the athletes, like they're prepared, right?
Right.
So when I got there, I learned to Olympic lift through their orientation process. Mm-hmm. The assistant strength and conditioning coach there at the time, he's now the director there. He competed in Olympic lifting and he was the one that presented the idea to me. So I remember originally they were getting ready for a grad assistant position to open and were like, hey, if you want to move down here, like we will do everything we can to assist you in your transition. So I thought that was just awesome that they offered that. And then they were like, hey, if you're going to be this grad assistant, you need to compete in something and it needs to be lifting. So a thing that I really appreciate about their program is that Kentucky prioritizes training of their coaches. So anything that those athletes are being asked to do, it's very likely that that coach has already done it in some capacity. And so one thing that they really look for is collegiate level athletic experience. So if you're an athlete in college, that's a huge plus for you. So I had that going on. But another thing is just the Olympic lifts are a staple of their program. So anything that goes toward Olympic lifting is another plus. And so when that got presented to me, I was like, oh, if this is what I need to do to be part of this program, like, sign me up. Sure. let's go. And they held true to that because I actually did not end up getting the grad assistant position immediately. There was one that was open that fall and I did not get mine until the following year. That's why I interned for a year. But the minute I accepted the grad assistant, they were like, all right, let's get a dowel rod in your hand. Here's the technique. Like I was competing that year. So it was a really awesome experience. And I was like open to saying yes to anything because I just wanted this career path so badly.
So when, do you think that helps, like, so with your experience in Olympic weightlifting and your success over the years and competing at nationals and the American Open and things, when freshmen or transfers come into to a program that you're at, do you think that that helps a little bit with like, with the buy-in of, well, you know, Coach Metzger's asking me to do this. I just watched her, you know, on YouTube and she, you know, earned bronze medal or, you know, silver in the snatch, clean and jerk, whatever. I'm going to do what she says because she's good at it. Or is it more of it helps open the door and then there's other ways to, you know, elicit buy-in from your athletes?
I think it definitely opens a door. Because I think immediately it gives me a little bit of weight to my name, I guess, as a coach. Mm-hmm. I don't know a better way to say that, but it kind of proves to them that I'm like walking the walk and talking the talk for what I am asking them to do. And the other thing that I've noticed is that it is opened the doors to having a mutual support for my athletes and for me, because I see them in here training, but I'm also at their sport, whether it's, you know, a soccer game, tennis match, softball game, like I'm watching them compete in their sport. So they see the support that I'm giving them all the time. But when they learn about my Olympic lifting, then that opens the door and invites them into my office to be like, how was your meet? How much did you lift today?
Right.
So then like they're curious to know about my athletic stuff. So it's been great because it does open the door for a lot of athletes to just have conversation, but it's not the only thing that I utilize to get buy-in from these athletes, but it's absolutely a helpful tool, especially because social media has blown up lately. So I will put my lifting stuff on there, but I will also purposely do the workouts that I have my athletes doing and posting it up there to be like, hey, I'm doing this. You all are too. So I just want to have that good supportive relationship both ways. And you know, weightlifting has been a great tool for that.
So when you first started and you competed in your first meet, so you competed 53, right? I think
originally.
Yeah. So your first meet, you qualify for the American Open. Was that like your expectation or just, I'm going to compete because they're asking me to, and we'll see what happens.
No, it was actually really funny. So I just competed because I was asked to, and where I was in Kentucky, it's really kind of a hotbed between Lexington, Louisville, and Cincinnati for weightlifting. There's kind of like weightlifting triangle up there. Sure. And so I was just at a really great location, and to be 100% honest, like weightlifting is all done in kilos and I had never worked with kilos. So I had no idea what I was lifting. Sure. My coach was also the assistant strength and conditioning coach at Kentucky. He was the one that came to the meet with me. He was the one that was declaring the numbers and he was like, all right, go lift that. And I was like, okay. So So I was really just ignorant to it all. Sure. I don't think I knew what numbers I was supposed to hit. I don't know what was on the barbell. Like, it was just all so new to me. And he just flipped it. I was like, okay. And that's how that went. So, to be fair, though, I will say weightlifting has blown up a lot. And so competing at a local level and qualifying for a national level back when I started was much easier than it is now.
Right. I mean, it just seems so, like, I don't know, like, you compete the first, your first go round, and you, I mean, you hit these elite numbers. Like, that's so cool. And you just continue doing that. So were you, like, did the training change at all? Like, you competed at a local meet, and now I'm going to go compete at the American Open. Like, do you approach it differently?
I mean, training absolutely changed, because now it was like weightlifting was my sport, and that's what I could focus on, because it wasn't like the first time I ever lifted X amount of pounds was in a weightlifting meet. I've been competing, well, I had been doing, I won't say competing, but I had been doing CrossFit workouts, and they utilize the Olympic lifts. So the time that I had competed, like, I had already cleaned 150 and I had already snatched, I don't even know what. So it was like, I knew I had that in me. I just needed it to be refined.
Sure.
So yes, it all became very Olympic lifting based and a lot less CrossFit, which I was fine with, because I'm not very good at CrossFit. So I was happy to focus on just the barbell movements.
Now, as you transition with your career, and you, you take a position at VCU, and you were just recently at Clemson, like, how did you stay with your same coach from Kentucky, or do you kind of, like, transition through, you know, somebody who's more local? Like, how has that worked?
I have switched coaches a couple of times. I've stayed within the same weightlifting team for the most part. So originally, yes, my coach was also one of the coaches at Kentucky. And then when I moved to Richmond and I took that position at VCU, I met Phil Sabatini out there, and he's part of East Coast Gold Weightlifting with Leo Totten. And so they were out in Virginia Beach, and they just happened to be at a local meet in Richmond. I met them there, you know, just kind of a little dabble of like, hey, do you have a coach? Like, can I train with you guys? And it kind of started out like that. And then I trained with Phil for maybe like 2 years or so. And that's where I really learned like the technical side of weightlifting. And that's where my numbers really jumped a lot. And it was just because we had to refine how I moved. And then the most recent change, so I now work with a different coach. Her name is Melissa. And she's someone that I met at my time at Kentucky, who I used to train and coach. We became friends, and now we kind of transitioned. So now she's coaching me. She's still under the umbrella of East Coast Gold Weightlifting, but I'm remote with her. So in remote, I was remote with Phil part-time as well. Like, I would drive down there so often, but for the most part, it was all my day-to-day was remote coaching. And that's what it is with Melissa as well. So
you remote coach, and you are responsible for getting athletes prepared to compete, like, in their respective sports. Like, how do you find the time to do all of that? Like, are you a magician? Like, where's this time coming from?
Well, you are very particular about your pockets of time. So you can get things done. And I remember when I was at VCU, I did a lot of double day sessions. So I had a really short morning session. And then when I had time in the afternoon was when I did like my really long sessions to train. And so with my transition here at Tennessee, especially the time of year, the demand for the athletes aren't as high. Soccer's out of season, tennis is about to go to NCAAs. I do have a bit more time in my day, but you have to balance when you can get your training in, because obviously my priority is my athletes and my job, but also another high priority is my own training. So I have to find like when I can do this. And some days it's like, maybe I can only get snatch in. And other days it's like, oh, I can do the whole thing.
Sure.
We just figure out where to plug and play. And my coach, Melissa, is really good at kind of altering how the weeks are going to look based on travel and things like that. So it's really helpful to have someone like that by your side.
So like you mentioned, so you're competing in the 2022 Nationals now coming up. So as you've competed through the years, you've been able to maintain this at least elite level of success to be able to qualify. So you're able to find at least two or three meets to compete in every year. When you approach those competitions, is it more of like, do you expect to, you know, I'm going to compete in a local meet to qualify for one of them, and then we're just going to go all out at the competition? Like, is there, there's a little bit of strategy to it, right? I guess. So how do you pick and choose when it's time to, you know, amp it up a little bit?
There's definitely strategy to it. And for me, I really only compete maybe twice a year, which are the national meets. I haven't competed locally in, I don't know, since I was at VCU.
Sure.
And so there obviously are times where I step away from the barbell, which is immediately after I compete. So I usually, you know, take a vacation and do some bodybuilding stuff or the things that I feel good to do, and so that I'm not getting that burnout feeling. But I mean, right now is a really great time to amp things up because we are about 2 months out. So things do get to, they do change, obviously, much like they would, you know, be periodized for an athlete that has a season. That my season entails one meet, six attempts, and theirs might be every week. So tailor it a little bit, but obviously you train to peak, and it's helpful to know when those meets are so you can train accordingly and plan accordingly.
So do you approach them differently now than you maybe you did, let's say like pre-COVID, right? So I mean, you were you know, high level at Clemson, you're at Tennessee now. So is there just like a different mindset to when you show up? I mean, obviously, you know what the routine's going to look like and how everything goes. But besides that, like what else, like take us like behind the scenes a little bit. Like, do you have like pre-comp routines, like rituals? Like, is there like other people that you bounce ideas off of as far as, you know, how to stay relaxed or loose at these, you know, high level competitions?
Yeah, I do have a routine, and that's stayed the same throughout my entire time that I've competed. You know, I like to get to the meets a day or so early, kind of get adjusted, know where everything is, check my weight, based on what my weight is at. Like, you know, maybe I get an awesome dinner, maybe I don't. I'm very introverted, I think, by nature. I think people think I'm very extroverted. I'm not. I like to keep to myself. So probably just chill out in my hotel room.
Sure.
I'll check my weight the night before the meet, the day of the meet, before weigh-ins. You weigh in 2 hours before, I'll still go check it even before then to make sure that I'm good to go. Obviously you want to make sure you've got all the stuff that you need. So singlets, tape, all of that great stuff. You go down, find your platform. So you have to scope that out in the back because the back is absolutely crazy. And I want to make sure that I'm in a good place where I'm not going to get distracted. So usually step away from the main platform. Then I just have, you know, a routine of which weights am I going to hit? How far out am I going to hit those? And what rep scheme are we going through? And so that's really just kind of based on where I fall in the lineup for my declared first opener attempt. So that's really kind of been my routine. And if I'm not lifting the weight in a warm-up, I'm sitting. We don't spend any extra energy. I am usually kept to myself. If I'm getting like, you know, really amped up, I try to just calm myself down. I think about my breathing. I've read a lot about calming techniques. And so ways to kind of breathe for a second, because even though I've been doing this for so long, I still get nervous. And I'm the thought of like, oh, I'm going to forget how to snatch. Like that comes up. But I know that it's in there. So I just have to be confident.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that about maybe the little bit of like angst and like confidence as far as, because you sometimes I think what we might see on social media, like you shared, it doesn't really paint the whole picture of what's actually going on. So we see these elite level athletes like yourself, coaches, but there's a lot more that happens behind. And like you said, it's six attempts. Like my throwers get six attempts too. So we train, you know, 15 hours a week for less than a minute of work. And right. it takes, I mean, working with an 18-year-old, like, you know, it doesn't go away maybe too well the first go round, where there's a few bumps in the road there. Mine also, I guess. So I think maybe we'll take a pause.